Hello, 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 geeks, freaks, and tomb dwellers, and welcome to episode 96 of Tombs of Horror. As always, I'm your host, Dustin. How are y'all doing today? I sure as fuck hope it's not as hot wherever you guys are as it's been here for the last couple weeks. I mean, it's been brutally hot. So, I hope it hasn't been that bad by you guys. Before we get into the episode proper, I've got a couple announcements. The first one is that we are now 4 episodes away from a milestone for this podcast, the 100th episode. It's a fucking wonder to me that this has lasted this long, but hey, obviously someone's listening, or I wouldn't still be doing this shit. So thank you all for continuing to listen. I really appreciate it. Anyway, I've got a few things planned for the big 100, and both Jerry and AK will hopefully be making an appearance on that episode after a lengthy absence to help me celebrate this milestone. And I say hopefully because while AK is usually able to, you know, get his ducks in a row and be ready for that episode, Jerry, on the other hand, in the summer is extremely hard to get a hold of. That's why he hasn't been on any episodes anytime recently. He's always got a lot of shit going on during the summer. So hopefully he'll be able to get his shit together and be ready for that 100th episode. And speaking of AK, last weekend, I made a guest appearance on his podcast, the Decibels Deep podcast, where we talked about and ranked every Motley Crue album. It was a good time. I had fun doing it. We had a delay actually getting me on that episode a few times because he had a couple things come up. And then when he was actually ready, I was on vacation, actually, so I wasn't able to do it then either. But last weekend, we finally got that shit taken care of. So if you haven't heard it, go and listen to the Decibels Deep podcast. And me being on it is in the description of the episode. I also wanted to get a couple more things out of the way. Recently, a couple of you guys have sent me emails. I don't want to say bitching, but I'm going to. Bitching about the inconsistency of when I release new episodes. Alright, look, as I've explained numerous times on different episodes throughout this podcast, sometimes life happens or gets in the way, and I won't always be able to release an episode every week. You know, I do have a job outside of this podcast and work, and music, sorry, and a lot of the times I don't feel like recording right when I get off of work. I mean, my work schedule has cleared off a little bit because before I was pretty much working every other fucking weekend as well as week. But now we've got it down to where I'm only working one or two weekends a month. So that has cleared up some time for me. So hopefully I'll be able to be more consistent. But also, sometimes I just really don't feel like putting out an episode because, like I said, podcasting is a job. You know, you have to figure out what you want to do for the episode, you know, or I at least have to sit down and rewatch movies and take notes and then, you know, record the episode. And that takes a lot of my fucking time. So sometimes I'm not gonna lie, I just don't fucking feel like releasing a new episode. But I try to for you guys, even if it's just a minisode. But sometimes there may be a week or two when I just don't feel like putting out a new episode. And so you guys will have to wait a week or two for a new one. You know, I'm not trying to be a dick, but that's just how it goes sometimes. I mean, and even though I like to do it all in one sitting, sometimes I don't even do a whole recording in one sitting. You know, sometimes I'll start one on a Tuesday and then stop and finish it up on the weekend and then send get it out so you guys can listen to it. But long and short of this is that, you know, I'm going to try to get an episode out every week. But sometimes there might be a week or two delay. Just because, like I said, life and shit happens. But I'll do my best to get you guys a new episode every week. Again, even if it's just a minisode. The second thing I wanted to talk about is a couple of you, maybe one or two of you, have sent me emails asking if I could promote your independent movie. And, you know, guys, that's not what I do on this episode. You know, I appreciate you asking me to watch and review it, but that's just not what I do. I don't promote movies on here. I talk about them and review them. I don't promote them, whether they're good or bad, independent or major movie studio. You know, I don't have the world's biggest fan base, but the ones I do are pretty dedicated listeners who listen to every episode, good or bad. And once again, I appreciate that. And I don't want to take the risk of, you know, say I review one of your independent films and I end up alienating you or other listeners or pissing you off because I give it a bad review. Because let's face it, sometimes I can be pretty brutal about movies I don't like on this podcast. And I don't want to risk losing listeners or a listener because of that. So I appreciate it, guys, but sorry, I'm just not going to review your independent films on this podcast. And there's just one other little bit of business I want to get into before we get into the episode proper. Recently, I released an album, Stay in Shadows. It's a 12-track album. I mean, it was supposed to drop about a week ago, let's just say, because it does take a couple days for my distro to get it out to Spotify and YouTube and all that other shit. but with this one, Stay in Shadows, it's taken over a week and a half to get this album sent out to all the streamers. I believe I told you guys that it was going to be coming out soon in the last episode or maybe the episode before that. I can't remember. But if you've been wondering where that is, that's what's going on with it. In short, I don't know when the fuck it's going to be out, to be honest. For some reason, my distro is jerking me around with it and taking forever to release it when it usually doesn't take this long. And I'm debating on what jumping ship and going to a different distro. But in the meantime, I did release a 6-song EP before I went on vacation a few weeks ago. What the fuck is it called? Why can't I ever remember my own shit? It's called I'd Rather Wrap My Cock in Barbed Wire and Pull As Hard As I Can. I know, weird fucking title. But yeah, it's just a 6-song EP. And if you haven't heard that yet, go and listen to it. I'd appreciate it. Until Stay in Shadows comes out, whenever the fuck that's going to be. But I am planning on trying to release a 2-song single, Innocence Ends, on that same distro, and we'll see what fucking happens. And if that takes just as long, I'm gonna jump ship and find a different distributor. Alright, so enough shit. Let's get into the episode proper. I've talked about both the Demonic Toys, Child's Play, and the Puppet Master franchises in past episodes, so I thought I'd delve a little deeper into the subgenre of killer toy movies. But be forewarned, while there are some good movies to be found in this genre, a lot of them are pretty much bullshit. Yeah, just be warned, I guess. So let's get into it with the episode's first film, 2021's The Curse of Humpty Dumpty.
Any history of memory problems?
No, I don't think so. My grandmother had dementia, didn't she, Mum?
Did she? There's no point babying Mum until she needs it.
I am not babying Mum.
We've got everything we need right here in the house.
But we are here to care for her. I mean, she can't manage in this big house all by herself.
We can't wait. How did it get here before us?
I don't know. There's something off about this.
There's something about that doll. And I just need to remember why your father and I got rid of it.
Thing? So you got rid of that thing a long time ago after... Wendy, how much do you remember?
I saw it! I know what a dream is and I know what reality is. I'm not crazy!
But he was a very special doll. One that everyone adored.
Wendy has been diagnosed with early onset dementia, and her daughters, Liz and Hazel, decide to come for a visit to see how Wendy is doing and take her back to the old country home where Wendy raised them, hoping that bringing her there will help ease Wendy's mind and help with her memory. However, instead of good memories being resurrected, some rather dark ones relating to Liz and Hazel's childhood and the death of their father come to the surface instead. All this is somehow connected to an old creepy Humpty Dumpty doll that neither one of the girls can ever remember owning. I'm not going to go into as much detail as I usually do on this one because I don't want to give you I don't want to give too much away, even though this movie has been out for over a year. If you're a fan of these kinds of movies, I'm sure it won't be too hard for you to figure out what ends up happening. It's all rather predictable, but it's all done rather well. It has a good, threatening atmosphere throughout the majority of the movie, and it's pretty well acted. The Humpty Dumpty doll is rather creepy, and there are some scenes with it that are actually pretty scary without the director having to rely on lame-ass jump scares. And when Humpty Dumpty's true form is shown, it's even fucking creepier. I think this is one that you should definitely check out. IMDb gave it a 4 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a 35%. Letterboxd a 2 out of 5. I, however, give it a 3.8 out of 5. Next up, we have 2019's Jack in the Box.
Evidence that suggests that jack-in-the-boxes were originally built in France to contain evil entities.
Mm-hmm.
Casey is a young American who finds himself some work as an overseas curator for a historical museum in a small town. While going through some stashed artifacts, he finds an old, junky, but creepy-looking jack-in-the-box. His co-worker, Lisa, applauds his find and makes sure that it is placed front and center for all the paying customers. Of course, it doesn't take very long for people to start dying. When this happens, when Casey sees the jack-in-the-box in its true demonic form, excuse me, crawl out of its box and kill a coworker, he goes to the authorities, who of course don't believe him. As the body count steadily rises, Casey must find out the secret of the jack-in-the-box and how to stop it before it's too late. When it comes down to it, this little movie, while it's much better than it probably should be, promises more than it can actually deliver. The jack-in-the-box is kind of a mix of Pennywise and that doll that used to sit on your grandma's couch that scared the shit out of you when you were a kid. Both forms of the creature are rather creepy, but when it comes right down to it, the movie just doesn't bring the scares like it should. It all kind of ends up being pretty tame and disappointing. This was followed by a sequel that was released this year, The Jack-in-the-Box, The Awakening, but I haven't bothered to watch it. IMDb gave it a 4.2 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes 20%, Letterboxd a 2 out of 5, and I give it a 2.3 out of 5. And that leads us into 2017's god-awful shitpile of a movie, Charlotte.
Hi, Mrs. Matthews.
Yeah, Max was great tonight. He's just in bed now.
Midnight?
Yeah, it's not like I had any plans. Oh, no, sorry, it's just your doll in the living room. Kind of creeps me out a little bit.
What doll?
The one with the cracked face on the shelf in the living room. What do you mean you guys don't have a doll?
The movie opens with a teenage girl going to a new house to babysit. She is talking on the phone to a friend when all of a sudden she is attacked by the titular creature, an old beaten up doll. Tied up and for some stupid fucking reason that is never explained or explored, forced to watch 7 short horror films. In the first story, 2 young girls fight over a doll and the doll ends up losing its eyes and has a leg torn off. Years later, one of the girls loses a leg and goes blind, and then, for some fucking reason, there's a sub-story with the third sister using voodoo for revenge is introduced. Don't ask me, it doesn't make any fucking sense, like, at all. The second story takes place on Halloween, where a couple playing chess are interrupted by a trick-or-treater who ends up leaving her purse behind. The husband ends up going missing when he tries to return it, and the wife goes to the same place and finds a store where nothing is what it seems. The third segment involves a babysitter who is telling a young child the story of Tic Tac, the troll, a monster who lives in a closet and tickles the feet of young children. If they're not ticklish, he takes their feet. Of course, it turns out that all of this is real. And this is as far as I'm going to go with this stupid fucking movie. To be honest, it's not worth anyone's fucking time to watch it. The acting fucking sucks throughout. The stories are all beyond stupid and really don't make any sense at all. And the wraparound ending is a complete generic cop-out. Speaking of which, the doll Charlotte? She looks absolutely nothing like the doll on the cover, and when you do see her in the opening segment of the wraparound, she looks like complete shit, not scary at all, and you wonder how anyone, even a teenage girl, could be attacked and tied up by it. Sorry, I just lost myself in my notes. As to why it made the babysitter sit through these piss-poor stories, who the fuck knows? Maybe it was lonely and just wanted a movie buddy. It's never fucking explained. This was followed by a sequel, Charlotte Returns, which was even fucking worse, as impossible as that may seem. IMDb gave it a 3.4 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 10%, Letterboxd once again a 2 out of 5, and I obviously give it a big fat fucking 0 out of 5. Next, we have 2017's The Elf. After he witnesses a tragic murder as a young child, Nick grows up having night terrors. After he is given an old toy shop as an inheritance, Nick discovers a cursed elf doll sealed inside an old trunk with the list of a naughty list that has members of his family written on it. He unwittingly sets it free, discovering too late that it is a conduit for a being to use on a killing spree for the holiday season. I wanted to like this. I really did. When I first saw this years ago, I thought that it was going to be like a Christmas child's play. However, it just turns out to be dead on arrival. Every single character in this is boring and annoying, and you can't fucking wait for them to get knocked out. It's also extremely slow-moving, and when you finally see the first kill, it's so ridiculous and underwhelming that you really don't give a shit. It's extremely boring and really doesn't have anything in it to redeem it or even make it recommendable to watch. It was followed by a sequel, Elves, that is only slightly better, but that really isn't saying much. IMDb gave it a 3.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a 13%, Letterboxd a 1.5 out of 5, and I, once again, give it a 0 out of 5. And that leads us into 2018's The Curse of the Witch's Doll.
You'll be staying at the village's oldest and most secluded building. It's ready for a new chapter, a new purpose, a new family.
Chloe? Why didn't you answer?
Are you sure we're alone here?
This place is as safe as any you are likely to find.
You don't have any idea where she is, do you?
We're doing all we can.
everyone else is giving up on her. If she's alive, then I am her last hope. A witch lives within these walls. She wants us to suffer as she is suffering. What if the witch has Chloe?
The movie opens in the 1600s with the woman being condemned as a witch. Before she can be put to death, she uses her powers to transfer her essence into a creepy-looking doll. We then jump to the 1940s, where Adeline Gray and her daughter Chloe are fleeing the bombings of the Germans. They come across an old manor, which is to become their new housing. And as soon as Adeline enters the place, she senses that something is not quite right. These feelings begin to become more and more right up to the day Chloe mysteriously disappears while playing hide-and-go-seek in the woods. Days go by and Chloe still hasn't come home, and the witch from the beginning of the movie begins to make her presence known by using a doll that houses her soul. And that's about as much as I'm going to give away about this movie. To not give away any spoilers, once again, even though this has been out for about 4 years now. It gets a little confusing near the end, and the big reveal and ending are both pretty much a disappointment. Still, this is a pretty decent little chiller. It's chock full of atmosphere, and the acting is more than decent considering the obvious low budget of the film. And while the witch's doll pretty much looks like a refugee from the old Robot Chicken days, it has some pretty fucking frightening facial expressions and provides a few scares throughout the film. IMDb gave this a 3.2 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 20%, Letterboxd a 2 out of 5, and I give it a 3.7 out of 5. And that, dear listener, leads us into 2018's Mandy the Haunted Doll.
Look, you're out now. You're in the clear. Everything's paid off. You just do this one final job for fast, unmarked cash, and we can go wherever the hell you want.
Just checking. Mandy, she does know I'm here, right?
I shall have my phone by my side all evening. Don't hesitate to call if necessary.
The movie opens in 1910, where a group of young boys bully a young girl and lock her inside a church. The girl is unable to get back out and ends up freezing to death. She dies clutching an old porcelain doll, which ends up being a vessel for her soul. We then fast forward to the present, where a wealthy old lady is looking for a babysitter and hires Amber, who is given an odd list of instructions that include staying away from the girl's room, who she's supposed to be watching, and to not wake her up. Does this sound a little familiar? It should. A list similar to this was described in The Boy. However, Amber doesn't really mind the strangeness, as she's not your typical babysitter. She's part of a crew who plan to rob the joint, but as you might have probably guessed, Amber's curiosity gets the best of her, and she discovers that the child she is supposed to be watching is in fact just a doll. Thinking that the old bat is just a tad crazy, Amber and her crew figure that robbing her will be easier than they first thought. However, they soon find that the doll has other plans, and Amber and her friends must find a way to survive the night. Yawn. Big fucking yawn. This movie really isn't anything new, and steals ideas from the previously mentioned The Boy, as well as the first Don't Breathe movie. It also has some pretty bad performances that will make most who watch this cringe like a motherfucker, and most who deliver these performances give their character as much depth as a mud puddle. It's actually a relief to see Mandy the doll knock them off, even though the deaths are pretty lame and bloodless. While Mandy the doll herself is creepy looking, the constant giggling and crying she does gets beyond annoying 10 minutes after Amber and her friends wake her up. Annabelle, she fucking ain't. Speaking of which, much like Annabelle, this is based on a supposedly true story. IMDb gave it a 2.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 5%. Letterboxd a 2 out of 5. And I give it a half a star out of 5. Next, we have 2017's Anna.
Right. So, what we're doing is we're filming this in a haunted location. So we're gonna have laser grids, PK meters, we're gonna have EMF detectors, Ouija boards to measure the paranormal realm. Let's begin. This is Susan.
I think the doll's name is Anna.
No, this is Sue.
Susanna. My mistake.
Dextera, Patrice.
Story has it that she can pull the soul of anyone that comes into physical contact with her.
She's here now. She's in the room.
The stars of two rival ghost hunting TV shows get together and plan to steal a supposedly haunted doll from a museum to boost their popularity and views online. They soon discover that the doll Anna doesn't have any interest in anything but tormenting female souls, so the two take it upon themselves to bring the doll victims, including Princess Jasmine, a psychic who is tricked into communicating with the demon who possesses the doll. This sucks. It completely and totally fucking sucks. The cover art and description of the movie tries to play this all off as a horror film, but in reality, it's more of a straight-up comedy. It's amazing to me that big names such as Cillian Murphy, Helen Mirren, and Luke Evans even agreed to appear in this steaming pile of shit. They obviously needed a fucking paycheck. There's even scenes in this where you can see the fucking boom mic, for fuck's sake. It's not worth anyone's time. IMDb gave it a 2.2 out of 10. It didn't even chart on Rotten Tomatoes. Letterboxd a 1.5 out of 5. And I give it a big fat 0 out of 5. And that brings us to 1999's Ragdoll. And I couldn't find a trailer for this anywhere, so you're just going to have to listen to me talk about it. A talented teenage rapper named Kwame uses his grandmother's ancient voodoo to help him in his revenge against a sadistic crime boss trying to extort his group after he and his two brothers put her in the hospital. He summons a dark spirit known as the Shadow Man to kill the criminal and his brothers. When the Shadow Man asks Kwame what he will pay, Kwame says that he will promise him anything except his grandmother, or the deal is off. The Shadow Man uses magic to give life to an old ragdoll and sends it to kill. Kwame soon learns that with each death of his enemies, the ragdoll then kills someone he cares about. When his girlfriend Tisha is targeted, his grandmother uses her magic to secretly trade places with Tisha. And when the ragdoll comes and kills her, it breaks the deal with the Shadow Man, as Kwame said his grandmother could not be harmed. Though Tisha is safe, Kwame can only mourn for his dead friends and grandmother as the movie ends. This is one of Full Moon's lesser known movies, and it's for pretty much good reason. To be quite honest, as I've said before in past episodes, I'm a big fan of Full Moon. But when it comes to this movie, it pretty much sucks. The budget seems to be a lot lower than usual, and it's just really kind of boring. It plays out more like a drama than an actual horror movie. And it's really just not anything special. It's just a typical horror movie that's really just kind of average and boring. Sorry, Full Moon, but this one really wasn't my style. IMDb gave this a 3.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 15%. Letterboxd, a 2.4 out of 5. And I give it a 1.2 out of 5. Next up, we have another Full Moon movie, and that is 2005's Doll Graveyard. Opening in 1911's Los Angeles, Cyril, an abusive father, finds his daughter Sophie playing in a room she's not supposed to be in. As punishment, he forces her to bury her four beloved handmade dolls, an African warrior, who is known as Ooga Booga, a German soldier, a porcelain girl, and a samurai, in their backyard, despite her pleas. When Sophia accidentally falls into the doll's grave and breaks her neck, Cyril buries her with the dolls to conceal the accident, unknowingly with his gold pocket watch. We then fast forward to L.A. in 2005, where the house is now occupied by the Philbrook family. Nerdy high school freshman Guy, who collects limited edition action figures, his slightly older teenage sister Dee Dee, and their single father Lester. Lester prepares for a date, instructing Dee Dee to babysit Guy while he is out, as well as giving them chores. Guy is tasked with yard work while Dee Dee is told to clean up the house. While raking, Guy discovers a samurai's miniature katana sticking up from the dirt, and eventually digs up the samurai doll himself. Before Lester leaves, Dee Dee catches him staring hypnotized at a golden pocket watch, which he says he found in the backyard. Once he leaves, Dee Dee invites her friends, promiscuous party girl Olivia, and shy Terry over to party. Olivia secretly invites two other boys, Tom and Rich, who regularly bully Guy. Guy agrees to keep the party secret after Terry is nice to him away from the others, and they discuss action figures. The boys then ambush Guy in his room once they arrive, insult him, tie his hands up, and break one of his precious action figures before leaving the party with the girls. This angers Sophia's spirit, which possesses a samurai doll, and which causes her to resurrect the other buried dolls and puts Guy, whose hands are still tied, in a trance-like state. Dee Dee then takes Tom upstairs to fuck him after everyone except Terry smokes and drinks. She handcuffs Tom and begins to take his clothes off before going to a closet to grab something else. While she's searching her closet, the German soldier enters the room and stabs Tom in the crotch with his elongated pickle hob. Hearing his screams, Dee Dee tries to help him while calling downstairs for help. Downstairs, however, the music is too loud for Olivia to hear, and she's dancing by herself after Rich refuses her advances. Terry insists on cleaning up before Lester returns home, and Rich, wanting to fuck Terry, offers to help her clean. She refuses him and goes upstairs to find Guy. Olivia goes upstairs to Dee Dee and Tom, who's bled out, when the German soldier, who is equipped with a tiny Luger, begins shooting at them. They run downstairs in time to see Ooga Booga standing on a table next to a heavily intoxicated Rich. The doll then stabs Rich's eye with the spear, then slices his throat, killing him. Upstairs, Terry finds Guy and frees him when the samurai tries attacking her, but stops when Guy commands it to. They make their way downstairs where Dee Dee and Olivia are trying to get her cell phone from the porcelain girl doll. The doll, whose face is cracked open in a jagged smile, attacks Olivia, biting her face and hand, and Dee Dee starts hitting it with the fire poker when Sophia possesses Guy. While possessed, he protects the dolls and starts calling himself Sophia. He knocks over a vase just as his father walks through the front door, mirroring the first scene of the movie when Cyril finds Sophia in the forbidden room. Lester is seemingly hypnotized by Cyril's watch into acting like Cyril and starts berating Guy/Sophia. The dolls then all attack Lester at once, which snaps him out of his trance. He calls out to Guy, which seems to break Sophia's possession over him, and Guy gathers the dolls and insists they bury them again to put Sophia's spirit at rest, which they do immediately. As the girls stand together looking at the dolls in the hole, Guy slips behind a stone pillar, and the camera slowly follows him around the corner, revealing a zombified Sophia staring back at the viewer, and the movie ends. Now, whereas the previous Full Moon movie I talked about, Ragdoll, before this, sucked, this one is much better and more in the tradition of a regular Full Moon movie. Bad acting, low budget, but it's still decent enough. And this one surprisingly has a lot of gore or gory-er moments for a Full Moon movie than most Full Moon movies do. The African doll, Ooga Booga, would also end up having his own movie named Ooga Booga about maybe 5 years later. That's one that you should also watch. I'm not going to talk about it in this episode because I believe I talked about it in a previous one. But both Doll Graveyard and Ooga Booga are worth the watch, even though Ooga Booga is surprisingly racist for a Full Moon movie. IMDb gave this a 4 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes at 25%. Letterboxd 2.8 out of 5. And I give it a 3.5 out of 5. And that leads us into 2015's boring as fuck, Robert. I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time talking about this horrible, boring pile of shit. But basically, when the elderly housekeeper, or nanny, or whatever the fuck she is fired by the well-to-do family that she works for, she gives their young son a creepy-as-fuck old doll as a parting gift. It soon becomes apparent that Robert is no regular doll, however, and the family must figure out how to stop it. As I've said several times, this movie is horribly boring, even though it's based on a supposedly true story that pretty much parallels the supposedly true story of Annabelle from the Conjuring movies. Also, like Annabelle, the doll in this movie looks nothing like the real Robert. Anyway, absolutely fucking nothing goes on for about the first 50 minutes of this movie. Just a whole lot of talking and nothing else. It has a very low body count. Only one or two deaths, I believe. And when they do occur, they happen off screen and are completely bloodless. The twist ending is also boring, and you can see it coming a mile away. And so don't waste your time with this. IMDb gave it a 3 out of 10. It didn't even chart on Rotten Tomatoes. Letterboxd a 2.3 out of 5. And I, of course, give it a 0 out of 5. Next up is 2016's first sequel, and only slightly better, The Curse of Robert the Doll. When a strapped for cash student starts working a night shift where the evil doll Robert is in an exhibit, the student begins to suspect that Robert really is alive and wreaking havoc at night in the museum, and of course, he is correct. Is it me, or does fucking Robert look exactly like a creepy William Dafoe puppet? Because that's what got my attention upon rewatching this shit for this episode. Anyway, this is slightly better than Robert was, but to be completely honest, that really isn't saying a whole hell of a lot. At least they make this first sequel move faster and got rid of all the dialogue that went absolutely nowhere in the and only served to fill the running time of the first film. There is literally no reason for this sequel to exist, outside of the killer doll trend that followed in the wake of Annabelle. IMDb gave it 3 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 15%, Letterboxd a 1.4 out of 5, and I give it a 1 out of 5. Next up is the second sequel, 2017's Robert and the Toymaker.
For many, many years. You know this.
Yeah, I know. But business isn't doing great, Amos.
My, oh girl came to the shop and she left a book with me and then fled. The Nazis are looking for it. It must never leave the shop.
That's the book.
Yes.
It's 1941, Nazi Germany. A legendary occult book that has the power to bring life to inanimate objects is brought into the possession of a toy maker, and brings Robert to life, and then goes on a run from the Nazis, using Robert as a way to defend himself. I guess the third time really is a charm, at least when it comes to this franchise. Even though this entry pretty blatantly rips off Puppet Master, it's much more enjoyable and entertaining than the previous two movies. If you are going to start with any entry in this franchise, this is the one to do it. As seeing the first two are not necessary to watch this, and you'll definitely enjoy this one much better. Even though, like I said, it's a pretty blatant ripoff of Puppet Master. IMDb gave it a 3.4 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a 20%. Letterboxd a 2.5 out of 5, and I give it a 3 out of 5. And to wrap up the franchise and this episode, we have 2019's last sequel, Robert Reborn.
How was the trip?
Interesting.
I noticed you returned the letter, Sam Flan. Any particular reason?
Yes, I decided to watch a period or so. This was no ordinary soul. So was gold. The enchanted dogs. They moved as if they were living beings. The man living in Kaliningrad. You mentioned that you know his real identity.
Amos Blackwood.
I work for Joseph Stein. He is very sick at the moment. And we believe that you can aid in his recovery.
Absolutely not. What is the book? I heard you didn't come willingly. Your dolls. They are on board this plane.
It's 1951 in the USSR, and the death of Stalin is just a matter of time. A KGB agent learns of and goes to a stage show that features three creepy dolls. The agent looks into the show's host and learns that he is a German toy maker who has in his possession an occult book that holds the ability to give eternal life. Thinking that this can save Stalin, the agent kidnaps the toy maker. But unbeknownst to the agent, Robert and his two new friends are in hot pursuit, intent on saving a toy maker, no matter who gets in their way. A direct sequel to the previous film, while this is an even more blatant ripoff of the Puppet Master franchise, this is still another step in the right direction for this franchise. It gets a little goofy about halfway through, but it's still much better than the first two movies. IMDb gave it a 2.7 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 30%, Letterboxd a 2.5 out of 5, and I give it a 3 out of 5. And that just about wraps it up. I forgot to mention something at the top of this episode. As most of you know, I was a contestant in the Next Up, or Orbit's Next Up online musical contest. I survived the first 5 rounds, even though I never believed that I would, and made it into the semifinals. But unfortunately, this last Thursday, I was eliminated in the semifinals. Did I say finals before? I meant to say that I made it into the semifinals. And like I said, I was eliminated in the semifinals. So my journey on Next Up is now over. I can't say I'm really all that disappointed, because like I said, I never expected to make it past the first round, let alone make it through the next 5 rounds into the semifinals. And plus, it gave me it gave Raped by Wolves plenty of exposure to other people that might not have heard my music before. Anyway, I wasn't done with that part. But anyway, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody that voted for me and supported me through that contest. I really appreciate it, and it really meant a lot to me. Anyway, as always, you can reach out to me at darksyde9034@gmail.com. And that's it, guys. I'm Dustin, and this has been Tombs of Horror. I'll see you next time.